Chapter 22. Driving South. After lunch, I rented a car and drove off towards the southeast. Bert had said that I must have plans, but in fact, I had no real idea of what to do next. I knew that somehow I had to get the CDs back from Sauvelagarde. Once I had them, I would feel safer. If necessary, I could use them as an insurance policy to threaten the people who were after me. They would do almost anything to stop Bert's accusations from being supported by evidence. But where would I go? Where would I hide? And now there was the added complication of Annie. I knew that any plans I made must include her. I couldn't just leave her again. I needed somewhere quiet to work things out properly before I made my move to get back the CDs. I thought about what to do as I drove across Flanders. Flanders is flat. Flanders is dull. The sky seems to weigh down on the earth like a big grey blanket. Flanders is history. Millions of young men died here. And there are many First World War graves all over the countryside. Flanders itself is also dying. Its factories are closed down, its workers unemployed. It is a depressed and depressing region. As I drove across it, I became more and more worried about the future, my future, and Annie's future. But as I got farther south, the countryside slowly started to develop into small hills and valleys. And there were no more dead industries, just farms and fields. Green fields full of fat, happy-looking cows and great forests. My mood began to improve. When evening came, I stopped in a small town and took a room in a hotel overlooking a river. I suddenly felt tired. After dinner, I went straight to my room and fell into a deep sleep. Late the next morning, I called Annie's number again. This time, she answered. It was a tired, lifeless voice.
Hello, Dad. Thanks for your emails.
Where have you been, Annie? I was worried about you. I've been phoning you, but all I got was the recorded message. What's going on?
I was so upset, I didn't notice the phone was off.
I could hear her crying quietly. Annie, I'm so sorry. How are you managing? What can I do?
Don't worry, Dad. Oh, Dad, why does it have to be like this? I can't stand it. There's no one here I can talk to now Lucien's gone.
Listen, Annie, I have to see you. You can't stay there alone. We have to meet.
Where are you, Dad?
Never mind about that. I'll call you again tonight, okay? I need to make some arrangements. Please, don't worry. Everything is going to be all right again. I'll take care of you from now on. I spent most of the day on the outside terrace of the hotel, looking at the river and thinking about what to do next. This was perhaps the only time I had really sat down to think about my life since I was a teenager. I realized that everything I had done was a lie. I had spent my life pretending to be someone I was not, pretending to have feelings I did not have. Pretending to believe things I did not really believe. My whole life had been built around pretending, around lying to other people. I had created a web of lies around myself so that no one could see who I really was. But worse, that web was now so thick and tight that I could not get out of it. I realized that lying to yourself is much worse than lying to other people.
But why? I thought back as far as I could. It probably all began with my parents' death in that terrible car accident. I was only 7 years old. I had pretended to myself that they were still alive. For months, I would talk to them in bed at night, pretending they were downstairs in my aunt's house, pretending that I would see them the next morning, that I only had to call them and they would come. And in the daytime, I would pretend to be brave, pretend that I could live without my parents, that I did not need them, pretend that I wasn't crying. And I pretended to like living with my aunt and her stupid husband, Uncle Len. I pretended to like playing cricket with him and going on those long, boring Sunday afternoon walks. And so it went on. Through my years at school and university, I was always pretending to be someone else. It was hardly surprising that I had become a spy. It was the perfect job for a professional pretender. I was paid for something which came naturally to me. It was never any effort for me to pretend to be a diplomat, a businessman, even a university professor. After I met Françoise, my wife, it was easy to pretend to love her, to give her all the things that were expected of a husband. And with a daughter, Annie, it was easy to play the role of the loving father. I would sometimes stand outside myself and think how well I was playing the part. And all the time that I was lying to them, I was also lying to myself. Was I still pretending now? Was my concern for Annie a pretense too? I hoped it was not. I had to untangle the web of lies my life had become. It would not be easy. Annie was my last chance to change the pattern of my life, to discover who I really was. I called Annie that evening. We arranged to meet at the railway station in Marseille in 3 days' time.